Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and we've all been talking about the shift for quite a while. It's supposed to be awakening our consciousness on a mass level. Well, we have a wonderful, wonderful person, I was going to say author, but greater than that person, multidimensional being, who's going to talk to us about a book she wrote, which is titled something absolutely enticing, is What Do You Do After You're Dead? Now, that's a pretty exciting title, Sandra Snead. Welcome to Paradigm Shifting.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, I just love the title, you cheeky thing. That's a really outrageous title, is it not?
Yeah, well, I have to correct you just a little bit. It's What to Do When You're Dead.
What to Do When You're Dead, I'm sorry.
Essentially the same thing you just said, just a little bit different.
I just thought it was hilarious. When I saw the title, I went perfect, because it's got a sense of the mundane and a sense of a very vaulted existence. Mm-hmm. So we want that. So what's happened? Where did you get this kind of connection? And is this your shift? Is that what you'd say?
Well, actually, no. My shift happened in 2004. What happened was I had lost a job that I loved and a man I loved, and I found myself completely and totally alone. And I would go down into the basement to write and write and write and write and try to quell an unbearable loneliness and panic that was coming over me. So I filled up a whole notebook with my lament, and then I opened up a brand new notebook, and I had my pencil poised on the top line, and I was about ready to write. I didn't notice that the pencil was moving until it stopped, and when it stopped, I looked down and I read, unemployed, ? It is my assertion you are employed by me. So that communication then sparked a year of solitude where I wound up filling up 10 spiral notebooks, taking dictation from this being we call God. Mm-hmm. And it's taken me 7 years to have the courage to go public, and that's what this book is a brand new dialogue that is written for publication, and God gives totally new information in this book that that was totally new to me at the time that I sat down to write this book.
Well, you know, I haven't exactly finished the whole book, but I've read a lot of it. And one of the things that hits me, and you know, a lot of us in metaphysics hear some of these terms. First of all, you're very, very clear about the words that you use and what they really mean. So there's a glossary at the beginning. But interestingly enough, when they or God or whomever speaks through you, I was very conscious about right in it were like waves and waves of understanding that really guided manifestation. And that's not what you were talking about on a logical level, but that's what I kept perceiving in it. Does that make sense?
Are you talking about God as this wave of being?
Yeah, yeah, I want to talk about that. You talk about that. You're articulate as can be.
Well, that's exactly what God has said God is to me. From the very beginning of our conversations, I didn't understand it because it took a complete reorientation in my mind, which is what that year of solitude was a complete reorienting, reprogramming. You know, I'm a former atheist. I didn't believe in anything I couldn't see, smell, taste, touch, feel.
I love
so,
that.
For me to understand what the wave of being is and then to stretch that across the entire universe, that took me years to understand. But something you obviously were feeling, sensing, experiencing just by reading God's words in the book.
Yes, it's really interesting because I've done a lot of study, so maybe we're all primed. Why did they pick you?
Well,
cheeky question.
Apparently, according to God, and I didn't know this until I wrote this first chapter of this book, that I chose this before I was born. And then everything, all the events that occurred when I was small were were purposeful in order for me that one day I would wake up to serve this purpose. It was absolutely designed from the very beginning, before I was even born into this world, that this was what I was going to pick up the pen and do. Hmm. In fact, I was supposed to be a writer from the very beginning, but I got sidetracked. I fell in love with the camera, and I became a photographer in my first career, and God has told me that was only supposed to be a hobby. It was never really supposed to be a career path, but it was a career path up until about age 37. I was living in New York City and working as a photographer until, you know, eventually everything came crumbling down, but it came crumbling down because I was not on the right path.
Now, it's interesting. At the very beginning, you talk about your early childhood, and I really like the way you framed that whole reason for having gone through what you went through. Would you mind doing a little brief thing on what happened when you were little and how it primed you for being more true to yourself?
Well, God actually says it. God talks about how, let me just give the background first. It's just easier for me to say it this way. When I was 2, my mother ran off with the Moonies. That was the mantra that went through my whole life growing up. She was this mystery person in my life. And the Moonies, my family, from my paternal side of the family, we blamed them for her having destroyed our family.
Mm.
And we blamed the Moonies, you know. So when I grew up and wound up meeting her at a later in life, and I dealt with that confrontation of a lost mother, these were very psychological healings that went on. But they didn't really give me any sense of purpose for what happened until I wound up writing this first chapter. And when God says, this was a purposeful thing, we led you away, or led your mother away, so that you would ground your love in God instead of in mother. Because God then became this mother to me at a very young age. And I didn't remember it, you know, after I grew up and started to, you know, became an adolescent and became angry, and through that angst kind of lost that, apparently, that intuitive connection to this great being. But
which a lot of us do, don't we, for a while?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, because we're finding ourselves, and we, in order to find ourselves, we look to the world outside of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have to undo in order to find God within us.
And they described your grittiness that you had developed in order to get through life for a while there. And I thought about, all of us have some version of that, hey?
Yeah, I just, some survival, you know, it's definitely programmed into our body to survive. And I had that will to survive that I know I got from my father. I dedicated this book to my father, who has, you know, just this iron-fisted will to survive. I mean, he really went through a great deal of loss at the loss of his family when my brother and I were very young.
Mm-hmm. And he was also an atheist, wasn't he?
No, not an atheist, but not a churchgoer.
Okay.
He never really talked about what he believed in, but his heart, he had you could see in his heart something, and his blue, steely blue eyes, something very important in them. And I remember he would take me flying. He was a weekend pilot. He was a mechanic and a weekend pilot, and he would take me flying on the weekends when I was young, and he would say, this is my religion. And that's when I guess I felt that it was okay to look outside of church, because I had a stepmother who was very devout, evangelical Christian, very Bible-beating kind of Christian church. And when we went to spend the weekends with my dad and go flying, and my dad would say, this is my religion, when we were up in the puffy white clouds and the blue sky, I gave myself permission to imagine the possibility that there is more than just a church to imagine God.
Mm.
So I wouldn't say by any means that he was an atheist. I just don't think he was a follower of any kind.
I thought it was interesting that they described your father's mechanical, being very adept with mechanical things, and that kind of helping you become very adept in that. You know, it just seemed to make a really nice story about why we're born a certain way and what have we chosen and how do the contracts show up. I just love the way you did that.
Well, I love you bringing that up because you're the first interviewer that has. I also love that because it gave so much purpose in all of the things that happened and appeared to be tragedies in my life growing up and put them in a perspective where they turned tragedy into purpose and purpose into life meaning, you know? Mm-hmm. And if we can all see these tragedies as purposeful, meaningful events, we turn ourselves into something so much more than things that happen to us, but things that are happening for us. And we then can shift into that same gear that this life is happening for us so that we can happen for our life and for others and serve others as God serves us, as God serves others.
And let me see, there are several things I wanted to bring up here. When we go back to God being the wave of being, and then my understanding is the way they have explained this kind of thing is the understanding and the letting go of the blame part and the understanding of the gift or the expansion in things really impacts the cells, doesn't it?
Did you say cells, C-E-Ls, or self?
No, the cells, C-E-L-L-S.
Yes.
And I kept thinking, oh, this is kind of the turning point for manifestation in a lot of ways. Do you see where my brain went as I was reading it?
I love that. I love that you so get it. And that, because that's when God talks about the mimicking nature of cells, the mirroring nature of cells, how cells are creating what they see. And so when you create an environment that allows your cells to see you as this being that is a reflection of the great being that is the wave of being that is the nature of God within you, then you expand.
Hmm. Well, we amp up the movement of the wave of being maybe, huh? Through us?
Through our reflection of it, yes.
It's so wonderful. So your life has changed radically, I'll bet, huh?
Oh, yeah.
So they stand by their teachings, you know?
Yes. And thank you for calling God they, because that also tells me you really get it. Also, you know, as much as there are many people who believe in God and use God and love God and feel God, but they still can't let go of he God. Mm. Or if they try to compensate for that he, they'll say he, she. Because they can't seem to let go of gender at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes letting go of gender and any idea that the great creative being has a gender in order to expand ourselves beyond our own gender. Because we are eternal. We, each one of us, are eternal beings, and these incarnations are just representing that aspect of God that we are in that life or in that particular incarnation.
I love that. Also, when you're talking about God being a wave of being, I go, remember the old thing about it's a wave, or if you choose something and define it, it's a particle, right?
Mm.
It's kind of similar, isn't it, where you can pick a God force that is like the particle of the wave. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I found that kind of interesting. But also, I wanted you to talk about how they define the soul. I really appreciated that. What is the soul?
Yeah. Yeah, wasn't that cool?
Mm-hmm.
It's
very cool.
So God said, spirit begat soul, and soul begat body. So soul is this quasi-mortal, quasi-eternal aspect of spirit that is individuated in a way to manipulate matter in order to create form. Hmm. Form is just the matter construction that is then adhering to spirit. And the relevance between is the soul. The soul is like the glue that is holding that molecular construct in suspension. The purpose of soul is to move through these incarnations, but then return to spirit. And it has to let go of its individuated nature of form in order to become spirit again. So,
you mean we grow out of the soul?
Right. Right. You grow out of the soul, you grow into the soul. You grow out of the soul, you grow into the soul. The soul is just a purposeful correction to spirit so that spirit can be in matter. Because spirit cannot dwell in matter in and of itself. It is too light in its way. Mm. It's too perfect, really. Perfection in its way. So there has to be some form of flaw that can create a cellular structure to allow spirit to then combine with matter so that matter can be animated.
Hmm. And that's through us, through our will, through our...
We are the spirit that wishes to expand. When we wish to expand, we devise a way to become the very thing that will hold the memory of what was with what is simultaneously. So when we are the nature of one kind of person and we want to become a new kind of person, we have to remember the old person and the new person simultaneously in order to compare them. When you're just spirit, you can only be one wave of being at a time,
mm-hmm.
because there's no matter to hold memory, and it's the reason that human beings were made in the first place, because human beings needed to tell God what's happening on the core in the core of creation on the surface of the earth. The human mind is the reminding mind. The great mind is this mind that is so vast, it cannot hold a question and an answer in the same time frame.
Hmm.
Okay, so the reminding mind was made in matter, in material, in man, made in man in order so that man could ask the question, and then God could answer that question, and they could coexist.
Aha. Hmm. I'm jumping around inside my mind here. Okay, so I got my
so many questions.
Well, you know, the questions are such a deep beingness, aren't they? I mean, how do they respond? Let's get physical for a bit. How do they respond to, or how does God respond to the shift on the planet? Because I remember at the beginning they talked about how this is a very difficult place to come. The earth. And then they talk about what planet means, right? Do you want to go into that a little bit? And then, because we were all geared up for the shift, right? Mm-hmm. And they also talk about how money feeds a lot of what's going on. And, you know, do you want to kind of do a little blurb about all of that, or is that too huge?
The earth changes.
Yeah.
Well, the most important thing about this book is God's warning that we are on a path of self-destruction, and that this destruction is so dire we may not make it back as a species. We may not make it back from our own extinction. Apparently human beings wipe themselves out about every 10,000 years.
Oh, Lord.
Yes. And
doesn't the soul remember that so it can help us learn how not to?
not really, because the evolution of because the evolution of a planet is purposeful. So every time man wipes himself out, the planet has an opportunity to recover and rebuild a whole new evolutionary scale of itself.
It's sort of like cells replicating themselves. Is it like that?
Yeah, but then also changing the course of that evolution because of the nature of the planet making its own changes. So man is also constructing the new environment. So that's a whole nother book, but there is purpose in man wiping himself out. The problem this time is that we're poisoning our food supply.
Yes, I want you to talk about that. That's a big issue.
Yes, we're poisoning our food supply, and it's not just genetically modifying our food. We're poisoning the soil. We're creating fake bodies. And evolution doesn't work fast enough to overcome these changes that we're manipulating in the genetic structure of the soil and the food that we are bringing to our bodies. And our bodies don't have enough nutrients for the cells to work well enough. And so the cancers that come from it will become too numerous to treat. Mm-hmm. Now, ultimately, the big problem for God in this is not only would we might wipe man out entirely, but we would also not have anyone here to help pray the souls of the individuals that get trapped on the earth to the place they're supposed to be, into spirit realm. They need that bridge that is partial material and partial spirit, which is what human, man that is spirit, humus that is material, combining together to help bridge the gap for the soul that's trapped here, thinking that they're still the body that they were before the body passed. So they're trapped in their own past.
So when you say there's nobody here to pray, what about beings on the other side? Can they not pray us through?
Right, no, because spirit cannot reach down. The soul must reach up. And that is because it's a forgiveness, which is a letting go, is a raising the vibrational signature of the individual that has to forgive, to let go, because they're holding on to something. Something's being held. They're holding themselves here for some reason that they are holding themselves here. Either they are confused, they think they're still this person that they were in the past. They maybe never believed that there were multiple bodies. Maybe they bought into the whole illusion of death. Mm-hmm. You know, for some reason they're still trapped here, and there's no brain matter to help change their mind.
Are they zombies?
Their state of mind,
I'm just being
is
funny.
That they were in before they passed, is the state of mind they're still in.
That's a very sad thought, right?
It is. And it is the hell that has been completely misrepresented in the whole biblical story.
Mm-hmm.
This is the hell. This is what God has called me, the void of the forlorn. Mm-hmm. Over time, and we're talking a long, long time, these souls lose all sense of what they were so that they just become part of this vast cauldron of the void of the forlorn.
Well, that kind of makes sense. It makes me sad, but it also makes sense. So
yeah.
What about, like, for example, if we're talking about the danger of I think they call it de-evolution. Is that
yes.
right? De-evolution. What can we do about it? We talk about manifesting and bringing in the wave of being in through the cells, or you know, that's kind of how I perceived it anyway. Mm-hmm. Is there something we can do to pick up the thrust of this connection to spirit, this growth that could go on and create a shift and change the soils, for example?
I'm sorry, I'm chuckling because...
You can chuckle with me. I like that.
Because the sad part is there's nothing that we as an individual can do for the world. We serve others that need our help, but we would become consumed by the world if we tried to do it for the world. We have to each and every one of us do it for ourselves, mm-hmm. in order for that shift to happen. It's a very strong possibility the shift will not happen on the planet.
Okay.
Okay, so in order for us to save ourselves and the next generation, we must educate everyone about the nature of the illusion of death.
Okay.
That's the first and primary thing that people must understand. There's no such thing as death. That we continue on, we are constantly evolving, our spirit is constantly moving, and it is in that river of life that we're moving in that we are pushing toward the greatest being. And this greatest being cannot be achieved on this planet.
Well, Sandra, here's something I'm, and this may sound very ignorant, but returning to the pool of the beings of forlorn, if we're moving through and there is no death, do we not have the ability to turn back and pray and send energy from the other side?
Yes, but it does no good because these people are so wrapped up in what they thought they were.
Okay, and the feelings, yeah.
Yep, the only people who they are willing to listen to are people who are right here on Earth now.
Who reaffirm
Yep, there are people who were born to see, hear, feel these ghosts of the past. And that's what these souls are. They are ghosts of their past.
Okay.
And these individuals who are the mediums, who are the spirit guides, who are the helpers, are so indoctrinated by superstition, they're afraid of their own gifts. So as long as we keep buying into the idea of death, we keep selling people on the story of heaven and hell, we keep telling them about devils and demons, we keep scaring them out of their own reason for having been born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're busy reacting. You don't really have time to go inside. So what do you recommend for people? Again, I want to jump around. First, about gardening and about the soil and that sort of thing. It's back to us doing it ourselves to reaffirm or to replenish the soil. Is that it? Is it?
Well, it's like this. You know, on the airplane, they always tell you when they tell you about the oxygen drop down mask, mm-hmm. that, you know, if you're there with your child, put yours on first.
Right.
And then put it on your child.
Okay.
That's exactly the order that God wants us to think about. First, move the self into action of saving the self.
Okay.
Now, once that's been accomplished, then you have all of the tools to help you save others. But do it in a way that is close to home so that you always stay with the core of creation that has saved you.
Mm.
So keep it always close to home.
But Sandra, I'm a terrible gardener.
But you are gardening your own soul.
That's right.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
There are people who are here on this earth who were born to know plants. They were born to know soil. They were born to know what they know.
Mm-hmm.
You simply are an individual who is giving attention to these individuals. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And as you give attention to them, more people know about them.
Right.
And the people who were born to be like them become like them because of what you're doing to help bring attention to them.
That's a wonderful way of putting it. The network.
Yes. Yes. Each of us has a purpose. And each one of us, when we find our purpose and we live our purpose and we live with purpose, are going to be doing exactly what we're supposed to be doing for that shift to happen.
Now,
you do not have to be a gardener.
Do you feel that? Thank you. I feel relieved.
You're welcome.
Because gosh knows I've tried, but you know what? I say I garden people.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway, when we're talking, when they talk about the world being fed by the drive for money, I think you had a better articulation than that. I wonder if they say anything about the rising personal purpose in some of the people that have their hands on the great global purse strings sort of thing. Do you think it's going to rise in many, many of those as well as people who are, you know, trying?
No.
Oh, darn.
No, it's not. And it's so sad and so dark. But all through time, God has led God's people away from the lords of, the word evil came through, but I haven't defined what evil is yet in order to use that word. So we'll say...
I love the way you define words. Thank you for that.
Thank you for being thankful of that. Words are very important to God. They're linguistic riddles are so important. But people who make money their God are forever in service to this God. But just as the Jews were led from the away from the Egyptian pharaohs, and just as the Indians were led by Gandhi, you know, God is constantly leading God's people away from the lords of power that will consume us. So it is we that must be the uprising through the great roots of God that gets implanted in us. So we cannot change our rulers. We must be our own rulers.
In that substructure. So the thing about money is that a lot of people that are in the spiritual realms have a little trouble with the money thing, don't they? Because we've all been taught not to turn it into our God, right?
Right. And it's because people don't fully understand what money is. Money is simply energy that you feed. And you need to give purpose to what you're feeding. If you are feeding the expansion of knowledge, you have to have things to help you do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that money is the energy that is feeding the things that facilitate the expansion. But these people that we're talking about who make money the God have a completely different set of principles.
Right.
They have made money the principle.
So it isn't money that's the problem, it's how we perceive it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It is how we perceive it. Money is not the evil. The evil is what we expand ourselves through. So if we expand ourselves through making others our slaves, then this is going to be a way of using money that is evil. Let's define evil, though, real quick. Evil means without love. It's all it means. It just means without love.
Well, it's funny that it's live backwards, isn't it?
Wow! Oh, wow!
I'm just being playful here with words.
I'm so dyslexic, I can't even see that, though.
Oh, that...
Yes! I see it now.
Well, if you're dyslexic, it's probably handy because you wouldn't be so stuck in the way the world thinks, and you know what I mean? It gives you the opportunity.
Yeah, I think it is a side effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about death, because there is no death. I know that. But I know that it's still a big fear for a lot of people who are really conscious, and it's a struggle for people. So did God talk at all about death and making that a more pleasant experience? I don't know, just something to make it more of an illusion instead of a sometimes treacherous gateway or whatever.
Right. You know, it's when we start to imagine ourselves as evolving through space, and that these bodies are just vessels for spirit, that maybe that helps. But what helped me really see this, even beyond what God's told me, is there is this wonderful book called Journey of Souls.
Oh, I love that book. I've read that.
Oh, my God. That just really brought home for me what God's been trying to teach me. And you know, for your listeners, this is a book by that is transcripts of where individuals are placed under hypnosis, and they talk about their life between lives, and then preparation for our incarnations. That really helped me to see and understand within me that there absolutely is no such thing as death.
Mm-hmm.
That these vessels we construct in order to live on this earth are, as God says in the book, released when our spirit returns to the realm of God.
Hmm.
Our spirit releases the body. The body doesn't release the soul, you know, but that the spirit releases the body when it's ready to return home.
Well, that's helpful, isn't it? You start thinking,
yeah,
maybe it's all the resistances that make it a little bit difficult. And you talk in, or God talks in the, I think it's fairly early in the book, it talks about the immortal soul as having a collection of feelings, reactions, and old stuff. So it comes to the earth to begin again, but it's already got a library of experience, right? Am I right?
Right.
Is that what we would call karma?
God says, let me ask God right now. God says, not exactly. Karma is when all of the things that you are become you.
Okay.
So all of the things that you make in your life, you become.
Okay.
So you make fear, you become afraid. You make love, you become love. When you make others your focus, and helping your focus, you become the nature of help. In other words, you are constantly being helped by that which you are helping.
Hmm.
When mortal soul is obtaining aspects of its previous incarnations, it's doing so in order to move from one state of being to another through these incarnations. So it holds on to remnants of past life experiences. These remnants will often turn the soul into a new being on the next incarnation.
So even if it seems awful and we say, oh, that's karmic, it's actually like a lathe that's turning us to have experience that we can rekindle or something?
No, it's more like, okay, so let me give an example of a woman I did a reading for. So I do these readings, these personal conversations with God for people. And I did this reading for a woman who, we found out in the reading that in a previous life, in this life, she experiences something nagging and nagging and nagging at her all the time. And she said, and God said, now formulate a question in your mind that is about this nagging. And she said, why am I so afraid to fail? And God says, you are afraid indeed, but it is not afraid of failure. You are afraid of confrontation. You are afraid of confrontation because in your previous life, you were a judge, jury, and executioner, and you killed two people whom you later found out were innocent, and that you held on to that in your soul, in your heart, and it became a black spot in your heart, so that in this incarnation, this black spot in your heart represents this fear of confronting these two souls that you killed.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, so when you're supposed to, like, pick up the phone and call someone or reach out to someone who could help you succeed, And she's got this fear, her heart, her nervousness would happen, you know, kind of get panicky. She would get panicky without knowing the source of it. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, when God gave her that reading, she said, "Oh, my God, that is just so amazing. I have had this phobia my whole life about prisons. And I, whenever they would execute someone here in Florida, I would have, like, nightmares for days afterwards.
Wow.
Like, I would see their face in my dreams." And, I mean, this was a huge thing for her. Her words, huge thing for her to get this bit of information that's a left over from a previous life that had a physical manifestation in her heart. So she was born with this physical manifestation that is a remnant of this extreme experience she had in a previous life.
That's so interesting. So what happened? Did she then... You know, the idea about karma, when you kind of get it, you get a release usually, don't you?
You do, and I have remained in contact with her, hoping that she would, you know, reveal how it's made changes. I'm not comfortable with, you know, prying, so stay tuned, you know, we'll find out.
But I often find, though, that people do, when they really get... even just some of the inkling of what has been the experience, some of the pressure comes off, right?
Absolutely. Well, they find out why, you know, why. They stop blaming themselves. It stops becoming of, why do I create all this self-sabotage? Where God would say there's no such thing as self-sabotage. What's happening is your unconscious mind works against you.
Right.
And that unconscious mind is... created by both your previous incarnations and experiences in this life, in this particular life, past experiences in this life. And you have to decide, you know, which is it. I just did a workshop in Austin called the 7 Self-Checks to let go of what's holding you back. And that's what it was all about, was, you know, here are 7 things you can look for within you that can give you some indication of a symptom of something that's holding you back.
Hmm. Are you continuing doing the workshop, and is it up on your website, that particular 7?
It is not up yet, but if people go to my website and sign up for my Wednesday Weisenheimer, which is, by the way, it's kind of a free addendum to the book, What to Do When You're Dead.
Okay.
I've taken 62 passages that are difficult in the book and then used them as inspiration to write a post about. And my and so God, it gives further explanation on these particular difficult passages, and they're really fascinating. So if you sign up for that, I will definitely let you know when the workshop is available.
That's wonderful.
I haven't decided whether I'll take a donation for that or if I'm going to put it up there for free yet. I have to pray on that. But
all of the above, probably.
Yeah.
One of the things about karma, let's return to that subject so I don't leave this hanging. But with karma, there's a lot of beings that I've spoken to that say, the karma's done now. There's no more karma. And I have my own opinions about that. But I just wondered if God said anything about that.
I've never asked about that, but I can ask right now.
Why don't you do that for us?
Okay. So God says that karma isn't what people believe. People believe that karma is something that you can affect. Karma is something you are, and you are what you do. What you do is what you are. So everything that you do affects your being of what you are. So when you do things that are against your nature, you are disrupting your natural karma. When you disrupt your nature and then disrupt others, you create a ripple of disrupted karma. When you allow yourself the full recognition of your great being within which you are, and you only do those things that represent that great being you are, then you generate a karmic cycle within you that is connected to your spiritual being. Your spiritual being is connected to God. If you are only doing that which is making you a spiritual being, then God can represent you in the presence of all that is God. So God recognizes God's self in the nature of all being when you are being God. And God's karmic nature is always represented in what you do. So what you do is what you are. What you are is what you do. And as you do for God, you do for others. As you do for others, you do for God. This is a cycle that is completely unitized with God. So if you break that unity, then your ripple effect becomes what Christians call evil. It is a darkness led by darkness. And all darkness becomes a cold reality. A cold reality is a dark place for people who don't understand the nature of karma that is in them, that is about what they do. They just keep doing what they saw. If you only do what you saw, instead of doing what God is being in you, then you only are that which the world tells you. And the world will tell you how imperfect you are. The world will tell you how destructive and gross you are, how weird and strange you are, how stupid and silly you are. So you become all of those things because you believe what the world is telling you. If, however, you are connected to the God that is within you, the being that you are that is perfect, and you see only perfection in yourself, and you do only that which is perfection of the self, then you represent the perfection that is the nature of God, and God represents the perfection that is only you, and you respond only to that which is perfect in another. You do not respond to that which is the uncontrollable nature of matter, only the controlled nature of spirit.
Oh my, that's wonderful. Well, that reframes it in my heart and soul in a huge way. What do we do about forgiveness? There are things that we do that are not of our God nature. You know that.
Yes. Yes.
But if we're aiming for that consciousness and that purity or purification, what do we do about forgiveness?
Forgiveness, do you want me to have God answer that?
If you'd like to, I'd love that. I'd be honored.
Me too. Okay, so God says that forgiveness is about what it is that is super. So when you are super, you are low in the manner of man. When you are high in the matter of man, that means that you become more matter, more material, less spirit. When you are super, this is superconductive, superficial, meaning official in the super, then you are the nature of spirit that is low on the human form. So if you examine then the distance between that which is high and that which is low on the human scale, then you will see there is a working way that is vibrational. The vibrational working way on the high of the being of God is a low in the nature of man. It is high in that it is high frequency. It is very, very small, very, very petite, and very important, meaning it is imported. So when you are on the high, the slow, it is a slower vibration, and you are on the waves that are very big, you slow the vibration way, way down. In this slow, 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 slow matter, material, you find that there is a holding pattern. of the nature of spirit.
Hmm.
This holding pattern can be released when spirit remembers itself, when it remembers it is more than this vibrational pattern, when it remembers that it is greater than the material realm that it is expressing itself to be. But in order to do that, it has to forgive, meaning give up, give back, let go, release, depend on only that which is spirit. It has given itself over to the nature of God. It has surrendered to that which is God. It has surrendered and made God what it is in the spirit of its own being. If you cannot forgive, you will never be able to let go of the physical matter material that is slow.
Wonderful.
The speed, the high speed vibrational nature of spirit must be remembered in order for letting go to occur. This is forgiveness, letting go.
That's perfect, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we're capable of doing that. It seems like that is also part of a wave, is it?
Yes. The problem is that people fear surrender. They fear letting go because if they let go, that means they have to say it's okay. And they don't feel okay. It's not okay.
Mm-hmm.
They're not okay. There's nothing about it that's okay. It's wrong. It's bad. It's remembered over and over and over and over again, constantly being relived, remembered, reconstructed in the mind. So when the mind will not forget, will not let go and forget and redirect to that which it is in the Spirit of God, then it will constantly recreate the very thing that must be forgiven.
And then you become a product of that, right?
You are that, exactly. Everything you do surrounds it.
That's a perfect little bit of a lesson for just before Thanksgiving, isn't it?
Yes.
Giving thanks for our experiences, eh?
Yes, thank you for teaching me what this experience taught me.
Oh, it's really been very, very powerful for me. I keep going blank, I think, because your frequency is so wonderful and I just want to float.
I know, I tend to stun people with that.
I love that.
When God talks.
I love that very much, and thank you for that. But also, would God say that our frequency is rising on this planet so that there is an easier flow for those of us who are really being led in that direction to look to connect with spirit? I mean, is the frequency really rising like we feel it is?
No, it's the opposite. It is actually lowering. The frequency is lowering, meaning the energy field is raising. So the frequency lowers until it becomes a much smaller wave. The wave that becomes smaller gets expanded because it's longer. So when something is on an amplitude wave, the higher the amplitude, the longer the wave. But the smaller the amplitude, the shorter the wave, but the longer the distance that wave can travel. So this is why it appears to be an awakening, because the distance between each awakening individual is getting connected because of the vast stretch that every awakening allows for.
So it's a different system than I thought. And so you said the energy field is moving faster?
Yes.
And can you describe a little bit of the energy field? And then we have to say goodbye, unfortunately.
Yeah. So the energy field is the energy that moves through all things, around all things, because of all things, inside all things, over all things, It's constantly moving, constantly fluctuating, constantly intensifying. And the reason that it's intensifying is because there are periods of time where there are eruptions in the planetary core. The core of this planet is erupting electromagnetic fields for the purpose of allowing change.
Okay.
This change is constantly occurring, and we are now in a wave of that change that will allow individuals to wake up so that they can prepare for the next phase of evolution that the planet is taking.
Mm, how wonderful. Now, we have to say goodbye, although I sure hope we can connect again. This has been very illuminating. And your book, why don't you tell everybody the exact name of the book and also about your website so they can get hold of you and get that wonderful newsletter.
Great. So my website is sondrasnead.com. That's S-O-N-D-R-A-S-N, like Nancy, E-E-D.com. The name of the book is What to Do When You're Dead, A Former Atheist Interviews the Source of Infinite Being. And I would love it if everybody signed up for the Wednesday Weisenheimer. And I just look forward to hearing from people, and I really appreciate this opportunity to talk to you.
Well, I just appreciate it very much. Thank you for your great work, for your transformation for us all. I really appreciate it, Sondra, and many, many blessings. And thank you, God.
Oh, likewise, Veronica.
So this is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the waves of energy or of frequency that came through with Sondra's work. And please connect with my website, veronicaentwistle.com, for feedback, suggestions for other guests, for a session with me, or even for Sondra. Many blessings. Thank you so much for listening.